Welcome back to season 5 of The Capstone. Can you believe it? Our amazing students and the great ideas they have for making positive change in the food system just keep coming. And I'm just so glad we have the continuing opportunity to bring all this inspiring and important content to you. For those of you checking us out for the first time, The Capstone is a podcast produced by Prescott College, specifically the Master of Science of Sustainable Food Systems program. Our program is an intentionally constructed 100% online graduate program that centers equity, as well as a bioregional perspective, which just means we design our courses so students have the opportunity to understand their life places more deeply, and in doing so, the idea is to facilitate the ability for students to take what they're learning and apply that to where it is they live, to the work they may be currently doing, or to actually envision and create the food systems change they would like to see in their communities. The MSFS program, as we call it, supports a strong interdisciplinary approach, validating the complexity of the food system, and we're really proud of our strong cohort, peer learning, and sharing model. So about me, I'm Lisa Trocchia. And in addition to being the host for the podcast, I serve in the leadership role for the program. It's been such a rewarding journey to work with our students at various points throughout the program, and ultimately to be able to show up here at the very end to see how it's all come together in the form of their culminating capstone experience. I know you'll enjoy hearing what our students are bringing forward this season as much as I do. So thanks again for listening and for supporting positive food systems work.
This response in, like, in my head was my solution. Like, why are there not enough food banks supporting local farms or have gardens to provide fresh food themselves instead of relying on the outdated food supply chain that we are currently relying on still?
Bianca Garcia was born and raised in Las Vegas, Nevada, home to people of Southern Paiute tribes. Bianca was a food service specialist in the Army for almost 4 years. And in 2013, she credits the film Hungry for Change for altering her perspectives about food. In May of 2022, she finally earned her master's degree in sustainable food systems from Prescott College. As a mother, she hopes to be part of the change that guides the trajectory of our current food system toward more regenerative agriculture and the creation of stronger local food systems. Moving forward, her research interests include exploring the benefits of intercropping cannabis with a range of vegetables, fruits, flowers, and herbs. Bianca joins me in this episode to discuss her capstone project, a case study of an organization in her hometown of Las Vegas. She investigates what makes this organization successful, particularly in response to rapid food insecurity challenges that were faced during the height of COVID-19. She discusses the specific issues faced in her bioregion, and through a comprehensive literature review, she shares her analysis of similar organizational models to offer recommendations on best practices. Hi, Bianca.
Hi, Lisa.
Well, thanks for taking time to join me on the podcast.
Of course, I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here too. Really looking forward to talking to you because you chose a topic to research for your capstone that interested me as well. When COVID-19 first began to impact food security, I was also paying really close attention to the responses in communities around the country. There was an impressive amount of mutual aid happening and collaborations between organizations that weren't typically involved in food distribution, but where you live in Las Vegas, Nevada, you were seeing an organization, a regional food bank, respond really effectively to the increase in demand. So let's start by putting this all into context. What was the situation on the ground in Las Vegas? What did food security look like before COVID-19? And then how did that change?
So before COVID-19, Nevada was already struggling with food insecurity, especially since the recession in 2008. And they were making steps like towards addressing food insecurity, like creating the Food Insecurity in Nevada, Nevada's Plan for Action in 2013, and the Office of Food Security within the Nevada Department of Health and Human Services. And since then, like from 2016 to 2019, food insecurity began to decrease in Nevada. It was one in eight people were food insecure. And this drastically changed, as you can imagine, when the pandemic hit. Nevada, as a whole, is mainly economically driven by the hospitality, tourism, and gaming industries, which require a lot of people to be employed to keep things running smoothly. So once the pandemic came into full swing and non-essential businesses were ordered to shut down, a lot of people lost their jobs. In January of 2020, unemployment in Nevada was at 3.6% and had peaked at 30.1% in April of 2020.
Wow.
So that's quite a big jump.
Yeah.
In Southern Nevada, food insecure individuals increased to one in six people. And Three Square also used their community partnerships to distribute food throughout Southern Nevada. But that also changed as the pandemic hit. They had to quickly adapt and respond to the emergency crisis by strategically placing drive-through distribution sites throughout the city with the help from several community partners.
So yeah, tell us a bit about Three Square. You just mentioned them. That's the food bank that you profiled. What's the region that they serve?
So Three Square is located in Las Vegas, Nevada, and they serve the counties in Southern Nevada, which include Clark County, which has the larger population, and the three surrounding rural counties, Lincoln, Nye, and Esmeralda.
So it really is a regional food bank. And I know from your research that you detail how the food bank was formed and is organized. So tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. So that's a bit of an interesting story. So I found an article from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Three Square was founded in 2007 by Eric Hilton, the youngest son of Conrad Hilton, founder of the Hilton Hotel Corporation, and his wife, Bibi. He had come home one day sick and read in the newspaper that the Clark County Community Food Bank was closing. And he said, "Not in my city." So I find this so great because a lot of people will read something and have all these great ideas for solutions, but never put the work in. And he did. So
right.
I do admit it must have been easier for him since he has a lot of connections from working in his father's hotel company for so many years. And currently the organization is still a top-down structure, but they embrace more progressive ideas and values.
Well, so part of your case study, you gathered some great information like that, but it included doing a literature review to find several other organizations who were also doing similar work during the pandemic on various scales. And this provided you basically with a frame to contrast and compare what was going on. So who'd you look at, and tell us what you found?
So I found three organizations. The Global Food Banking Network is an international nonprofit that works with many different countries in providing support every step of the way to those communities that are in need of food banks. So if they want to start one, Global Food Banking Network is there to help them. Their response to the COVID-19 pandemic was to provide more support to their existing food banks in the form of grants and extra support to receive donations from big food brands. They also provided technical assistance, so their food banks had the ability to change their distribution models to accommodate for the large increase in people needing food assistance. I also researched FEMA, but I was not really too impressed with their response model. They did, however, implement a food rescue component similar to Three Square, so I thought that was pretty cool. The organization that I really liked looking into was the American Friends Service Committee in New Mexico. Their response to the pandemic was a farm-to-food bank model. So instead of purchasing food from big corporations, they decided to support 30 small-scale farms throughout the state. And not only did they purchase the food from the farmers and donate to other food banks, they also provided farmers with seeds and other supplies they needed and asked for a small portion of what was grown to be donated to local pantries.
Nice.
So honestly, this response and like in my head was my solution. Like, why are there not enough food banks supporting local farms or have gardens to provide fresh food themselves instead of relying on the outdated food supply chain that we are currently relying on still?
Right. Yeah. It is complicated. I know from sort of diving into that a little bit in Athens, Ohio, where I spend a good amount of time, that some of those discussions have taken place, and it gets complicated in terms of the funding and what they're allowed to spend with the money that they get, but there are ways around. And I know that the food bank that serves that Southeastern Ohio region is starting to adopt a model more similar to what you just described, where they're able to support local farmers and food producers. So that's, I think you're right. That seems like a great solution. So the other interesting part of your capstone has to do with your suggestion that the success of the Three Square model is related to them having a very strong and diverse social network. And I know you do know a little bit about diverse network models because you took my course on the subject. So let's talk about that first before we really talk more about what you found out about Three Square. Tell me your thoughts about the advantages there are for organizations in cultivating diverse relationships within their networks.
Well, I think one of the main advantages to cultivating diverse relationships is being able to have all these different resources to be able to reach out to if they are like ever needed. Each organization, group, individual, company, they're all connected through something they have in common. But each of them will also have something else that each other doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you can reach out to your resource if you need it. Mm-hmm. Another advantage is to develop a strong base for the social network. So if the connections throughout the network are strong, there will always be weaker connections that can continue to develop trusting relationships over time, or they can fall off the network. But since the network already has a strong base, it will be resilient, and this connection falling off won't really be such a big deal.
Did I interrupt you? Were you going to say something else? Sorry. Well, tell us then how this played out for Three Square when you took a look at what you knew about a network growth and diverse networks. When you did the modeling, what did you find out?
So I began to make a model of Three Square social network, and what I found was that most of the board members we're connected to hotels, resorts, and gaming industries, or banks, or directly to the city of Las Vegas. But these are only the connections with the board members, of course. And before the pandemic, Three Square actually had relationships with over 1,300 community partners.
Wow.
And so that's a little bit insane.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's great.
And because they had these strong connections with hotels and resorts and gaming industries, they received about £500,000 of food within a 72-hour period, which is about 416,000 meals.
And wow, this that's amazing.
after the pandemic hit and they couldn't use that food, it was donated immediately to Three Square.
Wow, yeah.
So in addition to that, they also received leftover food from schools and restaurants that were closing down. And because they have so many relationships within the community, they were able to develop a rapid emergency response effort and set up drive-through distribution sites, like I mentioned earlier, with the help of community partners.
Yeah, that's the big deal. So one, it's like incredible that they, you know, their connections and relationships with the hotels and gaming industry, the resorts and so forth, allowed for them to sort of pivot with that food very quickly. But then that's a lot of food to distribute. So the fact that they were able to really rapidly set up these distribution sites, that's really, really amazing. And obviously, you know, if you've got a lot of food, you still have to get it to people. So that's a key piece.
Right.
That's amazing. So in the end, of all of this, you did provide some analysis and some recommendations that speak to this Three Square model. But I'm guessing they're applicable to any organization doing similar work. What are the findings then that you came up with? And I wonder if you could, if you would, share what came out of your analysis.
So I think ultimately what I would like to share is that Three Square's model works in a perfect world where pandemics don't occur and don't disturb the fragile supply chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three Square's model works right now, but it's not sustainable as far as transportation and dependability is concerned. And I think they could do a better job of supporting more local farms and community gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would like to share is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Without trust, there's no transparency, and without transparency, there's no relationship. Well, at least not any good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if another organization does not trust you, then they will be less willing to do work with you and give you what you need from them, and vice versa.
Right. So trust building is key. Well, yeah, I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk with you about the MSFS program. And wondering if you can share your reflections on what your experience was like as you went through the program.
Oh, wow. Well, it was definitely challenging, mostly because I do not come from an agricultural background at all. I learned so much in all of my courses, and I wish I could have taken all of the courses that were part of the program, but unfortunately I can't. So, but I had a lot going on, like in my personal life, but I think if all that wasn't going on, I would have been able to immerse myself deeper into the program than I did. But with that being said, I met some wonderful people such as yourself and Robin. And I also love speaking with my peers and learning what they found important in the subject matter. And, you know, a solution cannot come from one place or one perspective, but from many. And for me to be a part of that is just so, so amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I think that's so profound what you just said. And it really, it's wonderful to hear you say it, because we try to get that across to folks, especially in an online program, that solutions are complex, you know, and there's never any one solution. So when you get these perspectives that come about as being part of a cohort that sometimes are located all over the world, but, you know, more often than not, you know, across North America, it's really an amazing experience. So I'm really pleased that that you found it to be so. And we certainly enjoyed having you be part of our world for a couple of years at least. And you mentioned things going on in your life. Well, that happened to be the birth of a beautiful little baby, as I remember, correct?
Yes.
That's great. So, which also just shows you that, you know, you can do other things. You know, it's not like most students are working or have families or whatever, and they're still able to engage and get a lot out of the program. So we're just really glad that you were able to join us and that you were successful in producing such a great capstone and moving on through graduation. So that brings me to my next question, which is, do you have a sense of how this degree might impact your future?
To be completely honest with you, I have no idea, Lisa. I know that this degree is going to open a lot of doors for me. I don't know which ones. I have been contacted by a supervisor from a internship that I did in my undergrad year to work with the Nevada Department of Agriculture. So I might explore that a little bit, but I would like to keep my options open because there are just so many things to be done.
Yep, you're right about that. Well, Bianca, I wish you all the best in actualizing the best future possible. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to join me on the podcast. I really enjoyed your capstone. I enjoyed getting to know you over the last couple of years. And I really had a nice time talking with you today.
It was great talking with you as well.
Again, thanks for listening to The Capstone, a podcast produced by the Graduate Program in Sustainable Food Systems at Prescott College. And I really want to take time to thank our audio engineer and the producer of our original soundtracks, Christopher Ridgway. You know, we record these interviews remotely with folks wherever they are, with whatever audio equipment they have. And that often presents a challenge to Chris, but I have to say, one he never fails to meet by always making us sound so great. So thanks, Chris. You may pick up on some of that real life, real time aspect to these recordings, but we just like to think of that as embracing authenticity. Please join us again for our next episode in season 5. And until then, you can find all of the previous episodes cataloged on our website, www.thecapstone.info. Until next time, I'm Lisa Trocchia, wishing you well.